Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, well, for the first hour, the guest is Bill Hendon. Bill used to be a congressman, 2 terms in Congress, but he spent the last decade of his life. He's been, certainly worked as staffer in intelligence. He's worked on the committee that investigated the POWs back in 1991 with Senator Kerry and John McCain. But he's come out with a new book, An Enormous Crime. And you'll certainly want to hear this amazing story. Bill, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, how you doing, sir? Nice to hear from you.
Well, it's great. You know that your book, they're already out of them. I tried to order them today, and they told me they won't. I guess the next printing's going to be done. So that book must be moving pretty fast.
Well, we're overwhelmed with the response. And on Amazon.com, it just continues to move up, and then it moves down for a couple of days, and it moves back up even higher. And the more people, it seems, that hear about it, the more interest there is. And that's a wonderful thing, not for me, but for the prisoners in Southeast Asia, that their story is finally getting told. And thank you again, sir, for letting me be on your show.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, especially this time of night, because I know it's late back there, but I think it's such an important issue. And basically, ladies and gentlemen, what we're talking about is the men who were abandoned by Dick Nixon, President Nixon, and Henry Kissinger after the Vietnam War. Because it promised to pay the North Vietnamese $4.5 billion, and when they reneged on it, why, the Vietnamese wouldn't turn the prisoners over, and they've been holding them ever since then. And of course, at this time, we don't want those prisoners back. We probably wouldn't take them if they offered them for nothing, because I think that it would be too much of an embarrassment to the media and to the people back in Washington, D.C., to find out they've lied to us all this time about what happened to them. But Bill Hendon's been on this, and he's been actually had the opportunity of going through a lot of the classified material that was declassified, went through the archives. And why don't you tell us how you got your information? Because it's so vitally important people understand it's out there and has been so completely suppressed by the media and by certain people like John McCain, Senator John McCain, and
well,
Senator John Kerry.
I served in Congress with John McCain a long time back, but while I was in Congress, I was made a member of the POWMIA task force, Dr. Stan, and we saw the intelligence starting in the early 80s. When the boat people started coming out in the late 70s, it took a little while for their information to make its way to Washington from the refugee camps in the Far East. But, boy, when it started coming in, it was overwhelming, the things that they were saying they had seen, the American prisoners they had seen, the messages that the American prisoners had yelled to them and said, tell the world about us, or please tell the U.S. government we're here, please send food for us, we don't have food, if you will, the U.S. government will reward you. I mean, the messages were just, they were touching. And there are hundreds and hundreds of reports of the men there. And with the exception of Ronald Reagan in the early 80s, who made an earnest and really...
Hold that point. We'll be right back.
All right.
You were right ahead. You were just saying, with the exception of Ronald Reagan...
Well, with the exception of Ronald Reagan, nobody has done anything to try to respond to those reports and get the men described in the reports home.
Well, now, why didn't Ronald Reagan persist in it? Why did he back away from the issue?
There was some publicity got out about a mission in early 1981, and we talk about this in the book. It was a mission that was launched, a clandestine mission, into central Laos.
Was that the Bogrites?
No, sir. This happened to be what we call Fort Apache. It was our satellites had picked up some escape and evasion code and some numbers in a prison garden. And it indicated that there were some 52 American prisoners in the camp. And the intelligence was so good that a team was sent in to take pictures of the camp. And it was a team of Asians. They were not Americans. But the plan was, and these guys were, some of our Delta Force team was in northern Thailand. And had it been confirmed that the Americans were in the camp, they would have gone in and gotten these guys. I mean, it was well into the active stage when word got out that it was going on and blew up in the press. And when it did, they had to cancel the thing. And with that, Reagan's advisors went to him and said, "Mr. President, it looks like we're going to have another hostage crisis here. All this talk about American prisoners still being held in Indochina, and Mr. President, you just got elected because of a hostage crisis. That's why you beat Jimmy Carter." Well, it wasn't the only reason, of course, Ronald Reagan beat Jimmy Carter, but it sure did help. And so the advisors stepped between Reagan and the prisoners. I watched it happen, and from then on out, it's all been very, very difficult.
What about these forays we heard of that Colonel Bogrice was there any truth to that? Did they send him in on a separate effort to get the prisoners out? What was that about?
Yeah, there are indications, and Bo's a good man. He's a patriot. There's no question about that. He's gotten a lot of abuse for having done what he did. But he was, and if you've ever seen a war hero, Bogrice is that, there's no question. But he had been working on in the Pentagon and had heard all these stories in the late 70s. And from the research that we did, the U.S. government funded an early mission of his. And when it didn't work out, of course, they denied it.
Hold that thought, we'll be right there.
All right, sir.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is former Congressman Bill Hendon. He's been working on this prisoner of war issue for, 20 years now?
Since 1981, since I went to Washington.
Well, that's a lot longer than that.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, of course, he was saying that Ronald Reagan had tried to get something done, but he'd been, as soon as news got in the media about it, why his advisors told him he just better drop the issue, and they blocked any effort for President Reagan. After initially wanting to try to get the prisoners out, they effectively discouraged him. I really think that George Bush had an awful lot to do with that, but that's my personal opinion. Do you have any thoughts on that, or do you want to express them?
Well, I'll tell you, the George Bush, frankly, that I want to talk about is the current George Bush.
Oh, right, right.
Because he has a copy of this book. The Vietnam vets who come to town every year at Rolling Thunder Rally over Memorial Day, 100,000 or so of them come on their bikes, and they got these black and POW flags flying on their bikes, and they took, their leadership group took a copy of this book and gave it to President Bush back on Sunday last week, and in the Oval Office they went to meet with him, as they do. Not periodically, but I think they've been there a couple of times. And this year the president had invited them to bring their motorcycles, ride them over, and they did. And they greeted him and gave him the book and asked him to read it, and he said he would. So it's this President Bush that can get these men home, and really that's where the Bush family, I think the folks ought to be. He knows or is learning now. No matter what his advisors tell him, he's got this book. It's got the intelligence. There's no question. If a person reads this book, he will be convinced that the prisoners are there in large numbers. And so we just hope and pray that President Bush will see his way clear. About 2 weeks from now, the president of Vietnam is coming here to Washington and is going to meet in the White House with President George W. Bush. So if President Bush has got the book, he's got the information because the biker vets gave it to him, then my goodness, we're very hopeful that something might happen. These guys sitting in the Oval Office, one president to the other president, maybe they can start the ball rolling to work this thing out.
Well, of course, we've given an awful lot of aid and most favored nation treaty status to the North Vietnamese who are still holding our men. Now, how many are left over from Vietnam in Vietnam? How many are left over in Laos and Cambodia? Do we have any idea?
Well, we believe the intelligence indicates that approximately 700 men were left. In 1973.
Now, is that Vietnam, or does that include Laos as well?
That's Vietnam, but we can't be sure. Maybe it could be as high as 1,000 because of, say, 300 in Laos. It's hundreds of men, and hundreds of those men have survived to this day. There is nothing in the intelligence anywhere that says that they've taken them out and killed them, or that they've blown up their prisons, their underground prisons, or blown up their cave prisons with the men inside. None of that. The communists will do a lot of things, but they wouldn't do that. And the main reason is these men have great value. They're holding them for ransom. And Kissinger promised them the money and then reneged and wouldn't pay. You know, my goodness gracious.
Well, of course, we know that they actually held many of the men from Dien Bien Phu for, for ransom. These were the French Foreign Legion. And at least the French had the integrity to ransom them.
Well, I'll tell you where the Vietnamese really got the idea to start the program in early in the war, in the early 60s, to capture Americans and hold them for reparations, ransom, war damages, whatever, indemnification, whatever you might want to call it. They got the idea from Fidel Castro because he had held the Bay of Pigs prisoners and used them as ransom, and Jack and Bobby Kennedy paid it. It was $53 million in medical supplies, and we talk about that in the book. It was a nationwide effort to raise that money. People were sending in donations, and it's an amazing story, and the book really starts there. It tells that story, and it says that right after Castro got his money and his medical supplies and all that and returned the Cuban prisoners right around Christmas time, 1962, the war really began in earnest in January 63 over there in Vietnam, and Castro just told the Vietnamese, hey, look at this deal I just did with the Americans. You can do the same thing. You hold these guys and keep them alive. They have value. And at the end of the war, trade them back. Well, that's exactly what they did. And what happened was, Dr. Stan, they got an agreement from Kissinger and Nixon to pay $4 billion, you mentioned it, $4.75 billion. The U.S. would pay them to end the war and get our prisoners back. They gave us half of our prisoners and then said, where's the money? And Kissinger and Nixon said, oops, sorry, Watergate is consuming all our time now. We don't think we can get the money. Sorry, the deal's off. And the Vietnamese said, well, what about these guys? And there were the other half, the other 700, 650, whatever it was. We got half back, they kept half, and a whole bunch of those guys are still alive in prison, primarily underground prisons, in Indochina.
Now, why didn't Henry Kissinger, why didn't Richard Nixon tell the American people the truth? After once he was out of office, he still could have told the truth. Don't you think he owed it to those men who went overseas to fight for our freedom?
Well, of course, and that's why, and I'm not here to talk about me, but that's why I've spent since the day I found out with my former colleague and current and dear longtime friend, Congressman John LeBoutillier, who I know is a friend of yours and a friend of your listeners. When John and I found this out in 1981, when we first came to Congress, we just looked at each other and said, "Dear Lord, what's going on here?" We were told by Richard Nixon that the war ended, when the war ended, that all of our prisoners were home. That was in the spring of 73. And LeBoutillier and I are standing there in Congress in the spring of 81, 8 years later, and looking at these intelligence reports that indicated hundreds of our men still there. That was quite a revelation for us, and both of us have been heavily involved in it since, both in the government, out of the government, in Indochina, everywhere we can go. We do everything we can, and this book is the product of an awful lot of research into these stories, these reports, these intelligence reports, these satellite images, these radio intercepts relative to our men. You can't read this intelligence and not come away, well, just overwhelmed at how many men, brave men, were left and survived. And they survived to this day.
And Richard Nixon consistently lied about it until the very day of his death. That's what I find is so incomprehensible. Of course, what would we expect from Henry Kissinger? But, you know, the Richard Nixon, you know, who... I had always thought, you know, despite Watergate, I mean, it must have some redeeming qualities, but I could never forgive him for that.
Well, what we believe is it's time to forgive everybody. Forgive Nixon, forgive Kissinger, forgive everybody on this side of the Pacific, and forgive the people holding them. Shake hands in 3 weeks, 10 days, whatever it is, when the president of Vietnam, when he shows up at the White House, extend the hand of friendship, sit down with him, work the deal out, get our guys back, and try to put the Vietnam War behind us, because as long as our men are alive, and they're going to stay alive, okay, they're not going to kill them. They haven't. They're not going to. As long as they're alive in communist captivity, that war's not going to end for this country.
Well, didn't one of them offer to come back and promise to for a temporary leave to come over here and tell the American people and try to raise the money?
Back in the early 80s, we got intelligence, very credible intelligence, that there were 500 still alive at that point. I think it was much more than that, but this particular source was very credible. And he said one of the men, it was a colonel, who had approached the North Vietnamese and said, "Listen, let me go, just parole me, let me go back to the States, just me, and I will go around the country giving speeches, and I'll raise this dadgum money you guys keep asking for. I'll raise it myself by giving speeches and getting contributions and talking to my elected officials, and I'll get the money, I'll bring it back, and then you let my buddies that are here in prison with me go. But you get your money, and then will you let us all go home?" And the North Vietnamese said, "Nah, we don't want to do that. This has to come from the U.S. government. The treaty at Paris calls for it. A letter from Nixon calls for it, pledges it, promises it, and we're not going to do it that way. We don't want you... you stay in prison until your government pays the money." They're very strong about that. They don't want the money from charities. They don't want the money from what they call... what we call... non-governmental organizations, which are, in effect, charities. We got to do this deal ourselves. And George Bush Jr., President Bush, can do it. He's got the opportunity. He's got the book in his hand, and he told the vets he would read it. And the president of Vietnam will be in his office within 2 weeks.
Well, I hope and pray that things work out the way that...
Wouldn't that be something, Dr. Stan? What an opportunity for George Bush Jr. I mean, to make right one of the longest wrongs that this country has ever seen.
Hold that thought. Well, Bill, what sort of response have you got from the regular media? Now, I'm not talking about the alternative media like Radio Liberty, but, and, you know.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
A few of them have had the courage to come forward. Colonel Peck, there was a General Ty, and a few others that, risked everything to try to get the information out. Yeah, I've talked to Vert Mooney, a few of the others, who tried to get the information out, but so many people would simply compromise their principles and go along with the betrayal. And, when men go overseas to fight for your country, you expect you might lose your life, you might lose your limb or something, but you never expect to be betrayed by your leaders. And that, of course, was so unconscionable. And the fact that so many people in the military went along with it, this certainly is discouraging. On the other hand, the fact that when I called today to order copies of your book, so we would have them on hand, and we did order them, and they will be coming in. But apparently the first printing is all sold out. The second one, a printing won't be available until for another a week or 10 days. It does mean that there's a tremendous amount of interest, that the book is being bought up on Amazon and being purchased that way. So people really do care when they hear the truth.
There's no question. There's no question they care. And that's why I feel, so honored to be on your show, not the book right now, because you can't get it. But what about this website? Enormouscrime.com, and we're not there. There are no ads on there. We're not trying to sell anything. It's all free, but you get to read, Doctor, for the first time, how they secretly covered this thing up, and I mean like line by line. It is devastating stuff, and I say that having worked with it for a long, long time. When I go back through and look at what these men in the Defense Intelligence Agency did to these intelligence reports, and of course, if you do it to the intelligence report, you're doing it to the men in the intelligence report, and those are American prisoners, and they just, you won't believe how they covered this thing up, but you can read it today on the website, enormouscrime.com, click chapter 23, the cover-up, and read 110 pages, and when you get through reading it, sir, you'll be so angry. I don't know. It's really something.
Well, Attorney General Ty was was a lieutenant general or major general?
He was, sir. He was three-star, and he was director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and I had the great honor to work with him closely on some stuff and on this. And we talk about it in the book a lot. He was a wonderful man. I dedicate Beth Stewart and I, my co-author, we dedicate the book partly to him. He was a wonderful man.
And he did everything to try to get the information out. Was blocked at every turn by the
public firm. He came before Congress in 1981 and had the courage to say, absolutely no question, the men are still there. They're alive. There is no question our prisoners are held. And Ronald Reagan responded. God bless Ronald Reagan. He was the best. And he responded, but, after it got public, then, oh boy, here come the aides that, Mr. President, you can't do this, you can't. And it was that's the way it went. In spite of what General Ty said, in spite of what Congressman LaBoutelier said, in spite of what Congressman Bob Dornan, Duncan Hunter, David Dreyer, all the great guys that you sent us from California, we were all sitting back on the back bench yelling, "Let Reagan be Reagan. Let him do what he wants to do." And they wouldn't, and we didn't. But we've sure tried, those guys that I just mentioned and a few others, and I don't think this thing's over. I wouldn't be saying what I'm saying to you tonight, sir, if I didn't earnestly believe in my soul and in my heart that George Bush can make this deal within a couple of weeks when the president of Vietnam is sitting with him in the Oval Office.
Well, the question is, will he do it? Is he an honorable man? And we're going to find out, and we'll look forward to certainly give him all the praise in the world if he's willing to do that, because, of course, the Vietnamese, have everything to gain from increased trade with the United States and aid from the United States. The trouble is we've given them the trade, and we've given them the aid.
And got nothing in return.
And got absolutely nothing in return. And you have to ask yourself why. Well, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Congressman Bill Mendon, and this is one of the greatest blemishes on our nation of all time. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, former Congressman Bill Hendon, and we're talking about the men we left behind, the men who are betrayed by the leaders of our government and by the Pentagon. But I would think that there'd be an awful lot of people in the Pentagon who would have been very upset about this. I think the majority of our of the people working for the military are honorable people.
No question about that.
But were they just simply carrying out orders? Were they more willing to carry out their orders and preserve their careers than they were in standing on principle, like General Tai and a few of the others?
Well, when you had the failed rescue mission at Desert One, when the team went in to try to get the hostages in Iran, okay, that was a failed rescue mission. And the feeling was, after that failure, which was, and I've spoken with and interviewed for the book, and quoted in the book, the deputy commander, his name was Bucky Burrus, he was a lieutenant colonel at the time, he was the deputy on-scene commander at Desert One, and he was the commander of the Delta Force team that was going to go into Central Laos that I mentioned earlier. A real patriot, he's retired now. But after Desert One, there was a feeling in the military, they tell me, that, and I'm confident this is true, that the damage done by the failure rather than a successful mission really made the decision makers very, very uncomfortable about sending another rescue mission anywhere. Whether it's Vietnam or Japan or China or wherever. I mean, the next one just had to work because of the fallout from a failed mission, it didn't go down well around the world for America. That's not to say that Colonel Burrus and the rest of the men didn't do their best. My God, look, I mean, they risked everything. But it didn't work, and the feeling was we can't have another one. And in that regard, we quote General Colin Powell as saying that. You know, we just can't, the Army, he said, we can't withstand another failed rescue mission. And General Tai ran into that when he tried to get, and we talk about this, Doctor, a mission run into southern Vietnam. We had some prisoners there. Before the one that went into Laos. I mean, it wasn't the Laos thing wasn't the first rescue mission that was planned, but General Tai told me, and it's in the book, that that because of the failure...
Hold that thought, we'll be right back here.
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. The question was, then, why would we never try to rescue our men? And they were afraid, at least the rationale was, oh, we might have a failure, and oh, we had the failure over there in Iran when we tried to have a rescue mission. Well, I'll tell you, I talked to William H. Sullivan, who was the American ambassador to Iran at the time that he'd come home just before
right.
They tried that mission. And Sullivan said he never understood that mission. He said, he was there. He said there was no way that even if they'd gotten there, that it would have worked. And he said, I would hate to... He personally told me, sitting there at Columbia University, I would hate to think that this was all put on from the very beginning. I would not want to think that at all. But there was no possible way, knowing my embassy and the facilities there, there was no possible way they could have brought those helicopters in. And the inference was... it was never intended to succeed. Now, that was just what he told me. So I really don't know. I wasn't there. But, I mean, we find this attitude, well, gee, we had a failure, so we're never going to try to get any of our boys out again. Why would anybody ever want to go into the military if you knew you were going to be betrayed? And,
well,
and they wouldn't come after you again.
Well, not only the rescue mission part of it, which some very courageous men lost their lives at Desert One.
Right.
And yes, it didn't work out, and it did cost the country. Really, it was. America doesn't like a failure. The world doesn't like a failure. We know that. But my good, and again, General Tai was ready to run another mission, which we talk about in the book, in 1980 into southern Vietnam to up in Tay Ninh province. There was a camp up there, and the story about the Americans in there is just heart wrenching. But regardless, he couldn't do it because the chiefs told him, look, we can't have another failure. We can't do that. But when you end the war on a promise and a commitment, and in fact, in this case, the treaty, this money was required to be paid by the Paris Peace Accords. It doesn't say in the accords how much. It simply says that the U.S. will contribute to healing the wounds of war and post-war reconstruction in North Vietnam. Now, that was signed by Secretary Rogers on the 27th of January, 1973, in Paris. Nixon sent a letter, a secret letter, and all this was negotiated by Kissinger, and it calls for $4.75 billion to be paid, quote, without any political conditions, okay, to the North Vietnamese to rebuild their country. And so they gave us back half of our guys, and we didn't pay, and they have kept the other half. It's just so simple, and it's just so obvious from the documentation that that is what happened. It's in the treaty, and we have copies of the letter. And then what happened? After the war, were there any men left? Well, goodness gracious, if you look at the intelligence, and that's what we've done, hundreds. I'm talking about hundreds, and showing up continually from 1973 into the 21st century in desperate straits. I'm just glad this book's out, and I'm glad folks can go to the website, enormouscrime.com, and look at what some very, I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it, some very misguided and even perhaps evil people in the bureaucracy of our government have done to keep this story from the American people. And the reason they did it, they believed their motives were honorable. They thought that the greatest humiliation this country would ever undergo would be to pay money for these prisoners. And so they looked at these reports and they just shot them to pieces. And we show that on the internet how they did it. And they thought perhaps they were doing the right thing. We're going to save America from the embarrassment of having to pay money for these men. We're never going to let America pay ransom for these men.
But Bill,
sir.
Basically, you know, we ransomed the men at the Bay of Pigs. The French ransomed their men after Dien Bien Phu. I mean, why should they lie to the American people and betray them? You can't justify betrayal, you know, saying it would be an embarrassment. I mean, after all, we're paying, you know, tens, hundreds of billions of dollars were given the Chinese communists who have slaughtered our boys in Korea and financed North Vietnam during the war. We've given hundreds of billions of dollars to the Russians who financed the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War.
Of course.
Why should we think it would be wrong to tell the American people the truth? The truth one time.
The folks here in Washington don't think like the folks out there in America. And they think that because they've been elected to Congress or elected to the Senate or elected president, that they know better than the folks on Main Street. Now, the folks on Main Street know that a deal is a deal, and we want our guys back. Here they say, oh, this would be too traumatic for America. It would be embarrassing. Careers would be ruined retroactively. Kissinger would be embarrassed. Hey, Dr. Kissinger, don't be embarrassed. Shake hands with them, pay the money, and get our guys back. And with me, anyway, you'll be a hero.
Well, we'll wait and just hope and pray that something good comes out of the meeting between the president of North Vietnam and President Bush here in a couple of weeks.
Wouldn't that be something?
Well, I certainly hope and pray that something good comes out of it. Well, certainly, you would expect, though, the mainline media, what a great story to break, you know, the truth about what really happened for the New York Times and the Washington Post and the U.S. News and World Report.
Well, perhaps they will. because we, you know, we're 3 weeks out. I'd say 3 weeks. It's the 22nd of June. Okay, this is the 5th. What's that, 17 days? We're 17 days out from a historic crossroads, a historic moment. And, you know, the two presidents seated together, they've got our prisoners, and the president of North Vietnam or of Vietnam knows it. There ain't no doubt he knows it.
And so does
Russell. And President Bush has got this book and his pledge to the Vietnam vets that he will read it. And if he does, and I'm confident he's a man of his word, then he knows, regardless of what his advisors say, regardless of what all the older, other people in the past might say, he knows they got him. So they know they got him. We know they got him. And the two presidents are seated together. Now, that is an opportunity like none ever before, or not since the Paris Accord, the end of the war, to fix this thing, to make it right, and work a deal out and get these men home. It is we're very excited about it, obviously.
Well, now, what about the Vietnam vets? I mean, you got the Rolling Thunder, 100,000, maybe. I'd heard the figure even up to a couple of 100,000 when you took the...
There was a bunch of them in this town, and they're great guys.
Yeah, they sure are, and the Patriots, they care a lot more about America than a lot of people sitting in the hallowed halls of Congress, because they're willing to go out and fight. These other guys are willing to send somebody else out to fight and bleed and suffer and die, but they wouldn't think about doing it themselves. We got too many John Kerrys there in Washington, D.C.
Oh, boy, they brought a bunch of Patriots to town back on Memorial Day like they do every year. And they started in 1987 and 88, when all these stories got in the press. And once the Vietnam vets found out that their brothers were left, boy, they hit, well, I was going to say they hit the ceiling. They hit the streets. And they hit the halls of Congress, and they've been fighting. We got a picture in the book of the first Rolling Thunder rally coming across Memorial Bridge. And it's just a few guys, maybe 2,500 bikes. Now I think it was, I don't know how many 100,000 guys were in town.
Well,
and they still care, and they gave that book to George Bush in the Oval Office. God bless them for doing that. And, wouldn't it be something if somehow, this thing got worked out. We have a historic opportunity, Doctor.
Now, why is John McCain, who knows the truth, because he was on that committee that held hearings back there in 1991, along with John Kerry, why is John McCain been so intent upon betraying the men who were there with him?
You know what I think? Well, it really doesn't matter, Dr. Stan, what I think. I served with McCain. I was an intelligence investigator. I served with McCain in the House, and I was an intelligence investigator hired by my buddy Senator Bob Smith from New Hampshire, who was vice chairman of that committee in 1991 and 2. I was hired because I do know a little bit about this stuff, and Smith put me on the investigative staff, assigned me to the committee, and I was one of five. HUMINT, we call it, human intelligence investigators. And we spent like 3,000 hours studying all of these reports. And when we got through, we said, our opinion is that based on the intelligence, there are, hundreds, in the 600 to 700 range of men alive right now in June of 1992, in prison in Vietnam and Laos, and they and Senator McCain said, I don't agree. And he's looking at the same stuff that I'm looking at. But you got to remember, John McCain went over to Baghdad not long ago, and he had, I think, half of the 10th Mountain Division surrounding him to keep him safe. And he said, boy, this is safe right here in this market. Did you remember that?
No, I sure do.
I mean, he looked.
He had the helicopters just circling overhead, and he said,
it's just like going out
for a Sunday stroll.
I mean, and the American people just said, what in the hell is he talking about? But again, John's a good guy, but he looks at things from a different perspective. And his position is there aren't any prisoners left. And that's been his position since he came home. But you know what the truth is? He was ransomed home. Okay, he was He got out of there, and the rest of the returnees came home because the money was promised. And on that promise, they released John McCain, and I'm glad they did. Of course I am. We were thrilled to get these men back. But then they wouldn't, the U.S. wouldn't pay the rest, so the rest of the guys are still there. And perhaps that's pretty hard for John to face. I don't know. But it's hard for all of us to face. But we got half of them back. Let's go back and get the rest. Let's get them on the 22nd of this month in the Oval Office. I bet John would go along with that thinking. I hope he will. But if he won't, I hope President Bush will do it, and maybe he'll come around someday, John McCain.
All right, fine. Well, I won't. We'll just leave John McCain in the background. Senator Kerry also said, even though you had all of this human intelligence, and you had spent 4,000 hours going through this, and you said, yeah, they're there, and McCain, John Kerry looks at the pictures and says, I don't see anything.
Sure. I mean, it was beyond belief to me that a person could look at the intelligence, and not just the human intelligence. You mentioned the pictures. There's a picture on the book of a satellite image that was taken of a huge USA written in a rice paddy, and right below it, a 27-foot-tall signal. The USA is 37 feet long, 12-foot-tall letters, 37 feet long, in a dry rice paddy. You can see it just as clear as your hand in front of your face on the cover of the book. And right below it is huge, huge USA, under the USA. It's called a walking K. That's what the intelligence people call it. But it's a signal that is given to the pilots before they leave their base. And it's and they're told, if you get shot down and you survive, put this down on the ground. Make it out of rocks. Make it out of logs. Make it out of dirt. Do whatever you can do to send us a signal that you're alive. Well, they've been doing this time after time after time. And this just happens to be on the cover of the book. One case where the American people can see the satellite image. Well, John Kerry looked at that and said, nah, nothing there. And there was another one in 1992 on the 5th of June. Our satellites picked up the name of a missing pilot in a field 425 feet from the wall of one of the worst prisons in North Vietnam. And John Kerry had an expert, he hired an expert to look at it, and the guy said that man's name was written in the field by grass and natural shadings of the soil. That's not really his name. It just happened to spell his name with grass and soil texture and shadows, but there weren't any trees anywhere near it, so how could there be any shadows? These guys, it's just like the marketplace in Baghdad. They say what they determine in advance they want to say. On that, listen, I've been on a lot of these congressional deals where you go out, and before you fly in, everybody gets together and says, here's what we're going to say when we get there. And so McCain and his guys, they land in Baghdad, and they'd already decided, we're going to say it's safe here, because that's what they wanted the American people to think.
Bill, you've been over there, what, 30 times to Vietnam?
I've been all over North Vietnam, sir. I was fortunate enough, thanks to my buddy Bob Smith, who was senator at the time. He got me some access to some places that no other Americans have ever been. And
what did the Vietnamese tell you? I mean, they know what's going on.
Everybody knows what's going on,
except the American public.
Well, I hate to say I'm playing any role in this, but this book lets the American people know what the intelligence was. And the website, for free, lets the American people know what these people in our government who don't want this story out have done to those reports.
Well, I want you to give that website out again here so all of our listeners can go to that website tonight.
I pray they will, because it is both enlightening and enraging. And we spent a lot of time, sir, on this intelligence and on the committee at the task force when I was in Congress. And I think folks will be amazed. It's www.enormouscrime.com. And when it comes up, it talks a little bit about the book. It's got a picture of the cover of the book. And then on the right side, it's got three or four things. It says how to contact us and all this. You hit the cover-up. We call it the 1983-84 cover-up, how it was structured, how it was sustained.
Once again, that website, people can go there.
It's www.enormouscrime.com.
Enormouscrime.com.
Yes,
go
sir.
There. Get the information. We'll have the book as soon as it's as soon as we can lay our hands on it. Copies are all sold out. It's only been out for a week or so, and it's moving very... Where is it on Amazon right now?
Well, it jumps around. It's number one in Vietnam War books. It's number, I think, six in military books. I think it was 33 in history.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll tell you what, this hour has sure flown by, Bill. We got about 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
I just want to say thank you, Doctor, for letting me be on the show. And I say to your listeners, God bless you for caring about these men, and go to the website. Again, no advertisement, not trying to sell nothing, or books or anything else. But look at what some misguided, or even worse, people deep inside the secret bowels of the Pentagon in the Defense Intelligence Agency, look at what they did to American prisoners. And pray that they don't ever have the opportunity to do it to another one in Iraq or anywhere else. And I tell you, this is some really interesting information. www.enormouscrime.com. You get to see the actual intelligence documents. There's maps. There's pictures. I apologize for saying it, but it's good stuff. It's solid analysis. It's good. But it's the worst thing you'll ever read, because it's the cover-up in action, just as it was happening, and it's still being covered up about these men. But on the 22nd, praise God, on the 22nd of June, there's a meeting in the Oval Office, I've mentioned it over the last hour, between the President of Vietnam and the President of the United States. And right down the road from where I am here in Northwest Washington, the most powerful man in the world, George W. Bush. He can work this thing out. And he's got this book, thanks to the Vietnam vets giving it to him. Oh, my. Cross your fingers, say a prayer for the president, say a prayer for the men, say a prayer for our country, and let's shake hands with everybody and see if we can get these guys home.
Well, Bill, I really appreciate all the time and effort and heartbreak that you've been involved in, and the emotional turmoil I know that comes with this. I've talked to other people who've been in this battle and have tried to write books on it, who have actually written books on it, and we're just so emotionally involved at the end. It was hard to, really. I've even had one gentleman, I'm sure you know who he is, his name is Brown. He wrote a book called Moscow Bound, about the 100 or so of our troops that they sent off to Moscow.
John Brown, yeah. He's a good guy.
Good guy. He really is. But when I asked him to come on my program, he said I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I mean, I'm too emotionally exhausted.
I understand that. And you may have some listeners tonight after they get through reading this stuff on the internet.
We're out of time. God bless.
God bless you, sir.
Bye-bye. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening has been Bill Hendon. His book is called An Enormous Crime. We'll be carrying it. If you want to get interested, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. As soon as the second printing is available, we'll have it. I suspect they'll do everything they can to suppress it, as they did with Monica Jensen Stevenson's book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, where they accidentally shredded 5,000 copies. You want that story? Of course, we carry it in two tape sets. One is the Men We Left Behind, a four-tape set with interviews with Monica Jensen Stevenson, and And then the second tape set, One Man Returned, which she tells how they just accidentally suppressed her book and shredded 5,000 copies. They could not let the American people know the truth. We carry those, three tape sets, one on Vietnam, tell you why we were really there, and nobody's ever going to tell you what it was really all about, how we financed the North Vietnamese all during the Vietnam War so we could keep the war going. So 58,000 men would die because the Gulf of Tonkin never occurred. So we were not certainly fighting communism. Anybody would like, of course, to get a copy of my my March newsletter, which actually is Professor Sutton's testimony before the House, before the Republican Platform Committee in 1972, telling how we financed the North Vietnamese and equipped the North Vietnamese so we could keep the war going. If you'd like a copy of his testimony before the Republican Committee, it's available on my website at RadioLiberty.com, or we'll be glad to send you a copy of it if you just request it. And I think it's really rather good. Tony Sutton was a friend of mine before he passed away. His message is just as important today, because, of course, we frequently experiment on our soldiers and do horrible and grotesque things to them, and tens of thousands have died from the first Gulf War. Probably in the neighborhood of 78,000 have died since 1991. And you're never going to read that, but if you'd like to verify it, we'll be glad to send you the papers from the Veterans Administration. They're tracking them to see how fast they're dying off. Could this really be going on? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, because we're dealing with organized evil. In fact, it was Henry Kissinger, and he's quoted in Woodward and Bernstein's book, The Final Days, as saying, this is not an honorable business. I am not an honorable man. And I hope you won't be try to be honorable, too. And basically, Henry Kissinger simply lied, and he's still lying, and he's still the closest advisor to the President of the United States, according to Woodward's recent book, Under Siege. And on a regular basis, he's in Washington, D.C., advising George W. Bush about telling him what to do as far as the war and expanding the war over there in the Middle East, which is going to bring us into World War III. What you have to understand is we're dealing with people who have a different set of values because they worship a different God. If you'd like to learn more about the books, The Men We Left Behind, I should say that Kiss the Boys Goodbye in Spite House, of the two books Monica wrote, the book Betrayed, which is the story of the men we abandoned, and then the tape sets, The Men We Left Behind, and One Man Came Back, the story of Bobby Garwood, who did come back to tell us all about all the men were still over there. And the issue then became a vicious attack on him to discredit him so that people would never think about his message. And the old idea, if you don't like the message, you attack the messenger and you put him in prison. And that's what they tried to do with Bobby Garwood, who unfortunately escaped and came home to tell the American people about the betrayal. But we never remember the betrayal. We just always remember what a bad guy Bobby Garwood was. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in getting any of the material, including the book, we've been talking about an enormous crime. Our number is 1-800-544-8927 for details. We'd be glad to talk to our people and suggested donations if you're interested in getting the material. Understand we are involved in a spiritual battle against organized evil tonight. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guests. And right now, we have on the line Brad Friedman, who's on the front lines of the battle to try to get us honest elections. We don't have honest elections. We have electronic voting machines that simply, it can be programmed to give you any results you want. We saw this in the last election. Remember all that talk about hanging chads in 2000? That was just so they could get legislation through to get into the electronic voting machines so that they could rig all of the elections. And they rigged the last election. There's no question, of course, that exit polls show that John Kerry won the election in Ohio and in one other state. And ladies and gentlemen, I dislike John Kerry. But that doesn't matter. If they could rig that election, they could rig the election of everybody. And the tragedy is they did rig the election, and electronic voting machines cannot be depended on. And Brad Friedman's on the front lines of this battle trying to get the truth out. Brad, thanks very much for being with us.
Always my pleasure, Dr. Stan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, and just tell us what's really going on. Are we going to be able to get rid of those electronic voting machines and get honest elections, or are we simply going to become, honest elections seem to become just a remembrance of things past?
Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news here tonight, but yeah, things don't look good right now in a couple of different directions. One, certainly in regard to the voting machines and the election reform legislation that's now finally moving forward in the Congress. Frankly, the Democrats had been trying to move forward with election reform legislation for some time. Now they're finally in charge in both the House and Senate, and so they are bringing forward bills. That's the good news, and I think the good news stops right around there, because the bad news is the bills that they're bringing in both the House and the Senate are deeply flawed and will allow for the continued use of some of the worst of the electronic voting machines, the touchscreen direct recording electronic voting machines. We call them DREs, but they're basically these touchscreen voting machines on which a voter can never verify their ballot before it is cast and counted. As you're supposed to, as you're required to do, actually, under the Help America Vote Act. You can't do it on these machines, even if they have this so-called paper trail. And people need to understand that even on a touchscreen voting system, if there's a paper trail, the dirty little secret is no one ever counts that paper trail. It's meaningless. So that's a bad situation that seems to be getting worse, because the Democrats, for whatever reason, are going to allow these machines to continue. Now, a lot of them will be replaced, I believe, with the paper ballot systems. That is good. But as far as allowing these DREs to continue, that is very bad. I'm not sure why they're doing it, but they are doing it. And of course, that's just one side of the equation. We're learning a lot more about the other side of the equation from the Republicans and this whole voter fraud nonsense, which we can certainly go into details on as well.
All right, fine. What about here in California? Is the new Secretary of State, the Democratic Secretary of State, doing anything like she said?
Yes.
Or is it all rhetoric?
She is, actually, and that is the good news. So I'm glad you, you reminded me of that.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with Brad Friedman, who's right on top of everything that's going on. He's the leader in this country in this battle. Well, Brad, you pick up the story there. So, first of all, let's talk about, from my point of view, California. What about, first of all, are they going to get rid of these terrible machines in California?
Well, we don't yet know which way this is going to go, but that is because Deborah Bowen, who ran for Secretary of State and won on the promise that she was going to do a top-to-bottom review of these electronic voting machines, which her predecessor, Bruce McPherson, had really, you know, had been a rubber stamp for the voting machine companies and let them bring in whatever garbage they wanted to bring in. Bowen, on the other hand, has promised a first of its kind, first in the nation, top-to-bottom review of every electronic voting system currently certified in the state of California. This is great news, because not only are they reviewing it from top to bottom, but they've brought in special teams, which they call red teams, to do hack testing on these machines. This is the first time any of these voting machines have been subjected to this type of testing. In the past, the testing has really consisted of rubber stamping these machines, as I say. Now, you're going to have a team of folks saying, huh, well, if I was a bad guy, how would I access this machine? How would I manipulate the vote? And now they're going to actually get to put their theories to the test. Now, you may have known, if you follow bradblog.com, we've reported on quite a few different hacks that have occurred around the country. Princeton University was able to hack into a Diebold touchscreen machine and flip a vote, flip an election, without being detected. Out here in California, we also use the Sequoia system, which, as it turns out, has incredibly a yellow button on the back that a voter can press in a certain sequence and be allowed to vote as many times as they want until they're physically restrained. So each of these systems. Oh, excuse me, and of course the ES&S voting machine, which we also use out here, was found vulnerable recently down in the state of Florida, where they did some testing after a congressional race down there in the Florida's 13th district lost apparently 18,000 votes on the touchscreen machines in an election that was decided by 369 votes. So they did some testing on those machines, and in fact they found those too were vulnerable to viruses and hackers and everything else. So Deborah Bowen is now going through systematically through every voting machine that's certified here in the state of California. I think the voting machine companies are right to be quite nervous about it.
I think they have known all along
that their machines are hackable.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Brad Friedman, and he's pointed out that Deborah Bowen, who is the Secretary of State in California, is actually bringing in these teams to go over and examine the electronic voting machines. They found that one of them we have here in California, there's a little yellow button on the back, and you can just press it as many times as you want to, vote as many times as you want to, no limitation. You know, you can vote 20, 30, 50, 100 times, they're all there. And then some of the other machines, hackable. One of the machines we used in California had been used there in Florida. It had lost 18,000 votes in an election that was won by a plurality of 300. So, you know, obviously there's a great deal of problem with these voting machines. Do we have any idea how Deborah Bowen's going to act? Is she going to do away with these and get us back to a paper ballot like we used to have when we had a free country?
Yeah, well, it's what she has said is that they're going to, you know, systematically go through all of these machines and do more than just test them, but actually, you know, for the first time, take a look at them from the perspective of a bad guy or a black hat, as they call them in this particular game. And, you know, see if they are vulnerable. Find out their vulnerabilities, and then at that time, she's going to determine the proper steps to take. She can decertify them entirely. She can certify them for use again. She can certify them provisionally. And I think she's keeping her cards very close to her vest right now, which I think is probably the right thing to do, because I think she does not want to be seen as biased one way or another towards any type of machine or another. She's trying to give them all a fair chance. And, you know, given that fair chance, however, and given some of the folks who I happen to know who are working on these teams, I don't suspect these voting machines are going to stand up to much scrutiny. And when they don't, Well, we'll have to see what she will do. I'm hoping she decertifies them, as you suggest, and gets back to a paper ballot system, a paper ballot that is actually counted for every vote cast in America. I know that's a crazy and radical idea, Dr. Stan, but I think the country is ready for it, don't you?
Oh, I certainly do it. I know I certainly am. What about now? Many, many people are voting today by absentee ballot. It is a paper ballot that we of course take and we put in the box there at least at the voting station. Are those actually counted by hand?
They're not, and that's something that people need to realize as well. When you vote by absentee ballot, a lot of people think, well, this, you know, I've got a paper ballot here, so this is going to be counted. Well, hopefully it will be counted, but it is also counted by the same computerized, usually optical scan systems. And those machines as well can be gamed. Now, the upside is, that though the those type of machines can also be hacked, at least you have the paper ballot. You have the record of the voter intent. So if there's any questions, if in California here we actually do a 1% audit, and if some of these congressional bills pass on the federal level, there may be a 2 or 3% or even higher hand audit of these paper ballots. And, you know, in that way we can find out if there was a problem. Now, that you can at least do when you have a paper ballot, like an absentee ballot. When you're dealing with a touchscreen system, as we have around California, in early voting down here in L.A., across Monterey County and so forth, all they do is touchscreen voting. In that case, there really is no verified record of the voter intent, and that's a very dangerous place to be. And so, you know, there's really dangers with all of these systems. But I'll tell you, Stan, one of the things that I've learned as I've been reporting on this, studying this, and so forth, is that with all of the problems that we have, with all of the different machines, there is going to be no perfect system. What makes the difference is the people who are watching the poll workers, the people who are there on election night watching the tabulation. This is why you need a system that is open and transparent and that can be monitored by the citizens, because if you count on the government to do it, well, you know that's a bad idea, because what you're doing is asking the government to essentially monitor themselves. These are elections that are run, you know, that quite often they are running in. That's not going to work. We need the people to participate again in their democracy, to work as poll workers and as I say, and so forth, and keep an eye on these guys and keep them honest. It's the only thing that keeps them honest is the people and keeping that system transparent. Transparent. That's why it's such a danger then when you allow for this for the secret counting of ballots, which is what you have when you use the secret software in these voting machines. You got to keep it open, you got to keep it transparent, or it's very easy to game the system.
Yeah, because the companies say, well, we can't let you know how our software works because that's a proprietary secret, and after all, somebody might steal our secret from it, so you can't know, you know, how we do this. And yet, of course, the software can leave itself wide open to hacking, and they can come up with any conclusion they want to, unless we are able actually to check this. And even if you do check it, they can still, halfway through the voting, change it, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why the best you can do is make it as hard as possible for the bad guys. So the more transparency, the more you open those systems. And, yeah, you're right, these private companies, who have taken over our public democracy here, believe that, oh, well, this is competition. We can't let our competitors see how we run our software. Now, keep in mind, essentially, all that voting machines do and voting software does is add 1 + 1 + 1. It's not incredibly complicated, and yet they claim they don't want their competitors to see how they do this magic. Well, that's fine. In any other business, if you're in banking, if you're running ATMs, fine, keep it private. It's a private sector thing. You can compete. But we're talking about democracy, and we're talking about, you know, the very root, you know, of our entire system here, and the one right, the right to vote and have that vote counted correctly, that really protects every other right. So it's my opinion, at least, that if these voting machine companies want to get in this game, and they want to get these billions of dollars that they're getting from the taxpayers for these voting systems, the least they can do, their patriotic duty, is to open up their systems and say, well, voting machines are different. In this case, yes, we are going to disclose how we do things because that is for the good of this country. And you know what? If they're taking billions of our dollars, I believe that's the least that they can do for us.
But do we really want these machines at all? Wouldn't we be better with just a paper ballot that'd be hand-counted and maybe verified by optical scanning? But, you know, until we can actually have, you know, the human factor here, I mean, because it's much easier, much harder to corrupt, you know, 10,000 of people who are working at the polls than one man who's working, you know, in the Secretary of State's office or, you know, in the office of the individual counties. Here, over in Monterey, they had a crook who was actually counting the votes. I had a friend of mine who was running for state assembly over there, and when she counting the votes, you know, went to bed at night, she was 2-1 ahead of her opposition in the Republican primary. She woke up, she was 2-1 behind. And that man, now we find out, was stealing money from his credit card. How do we know he didn't actually rig all the votes before that as well?
Well, that's right. We don't know. And you're talking about Tony Anchunda.
Absolutely. And the fact that they would let him off, oh, my goodness, I've got to take care of my mother. You know, I'm just so sorry I got caught. I mean, I'm so sorry I cheated. How do we know he wasn't cheating on everything?
Well,
how do we know that he wasn't rigging the elections as well? I believe when a public official, you know, violates his trust, he ought to be put away for a long period of time. Otherwise, of course, you know, there is no way, since we've taken morality out of our country, and right and wrong, and everything's relative, there's no way to hold the public officials responsible unless it's fear of punishment. And when they give him a slap on the wrist for stealing money, what else has he stolen that might even be much more important?
Well, that's right. He actually pled no contest to 43 criminal counts. And it was very interesting how that happened because I had been on the air with this fellow in Chundo just a few months beforehand, and I was asking him questions about their new electronic voting machine. And one of the things, you know, I said, well, what are you going to do at the end of the election if you find that these so-called paper trails, if you do an audit of them and you find they don't match up with the machine numbers, which one are you going to go with? And he said, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And I said, well, don't you think that's the sort of thing you ought to decide before it becomes an issue, before you have an election? And he said, well, you know, Brad, to a certain extent, people need to have trust and faith in their elections officials. And in this case, that would be me. Now, that's what Tony Anchundo said in late September 2005, and by early April, I think it was, 2006, he had been indicted on 43 criminal counts.
And, of course, how much faith can we put in any of these people?
None.
I don't believe we can. I believe our founding fathers of this country did not have faith in people, and that is why they wanted to restrict the power of government. And when it comes to voting, that's why we need paper ballots.
Well, that's right. And listen, the best elections officials in the country, the most honest ones, will tell you, don't trust me. Don't trust anyone. And you need a system that does not rely on trust, but it relies on transparency and checks and balances so that we can make sure, look, even accidents happen. If you have the most honest guy in the world, they can make an accident. That's why the system needs to be open and transparent. And as we're moving forward with these voting machines that use secret software to count our vote, it's becoming more and more difficult to see what's going on inside that black box. And even if everything is on the up and up, we can't possibly know that. And that's the problem with the systems that and the road that we're heading down.
As I've told the story before, there was one precinct in Ohio that had 800 people registered to vote and 4,000 votes for George Bush. And when people said, how could that be? 800 people voted in the precinct, 4,000 votes for George Bush. Somebody said, well, it's the most logical thing in the world. The machine had a hiccup. The machine had a hiccup.
Yeah.
And so we accept that because, after all, you know what hiccups do. Ladies and gentlemen, if we don't have honest people and have a moral society, what's going to happen to America? What's going to happen to our future? What's going to happen to our families? Well, go right ahead there, Brad, and let's pick up the story from there.
Well, yeah. So that's the point. That's what I've been, calling for. I've been trying to expose the dangers of these voting systems, and even if we don't have someone rigging them, even if they have, like you described, a hiccup, if we don't have the people. As a matter of fact, the incident you described was from Ohio in 2004, in Franklin County, I believe it was, Gahanna 1B precinct. And they found, over 4,000 votes for George W. Bush, with, I think it was actually 600 or so people who had voted that day. Now, that was discovered by people on the Internet who were combing through the numbers, and they had been putting up election results on the Internet. And again, it was the people. It was the citizens. It was because there was this transparency that we were able to find this problem in the first place. Who knows if it would have ever been found by the elections officials themselves. It's always the people. And you mentioned Monterey County as well. A very recent story, a citizen up there, Monterey County, California, just had a special election, I believe, last Tuesday. And this fellow went in to vote early voting, and he had asked for a paper ballot, as is his right. And the new acting registrar up there gave him this notice that said, "Warning, if you vote on paper, your vote may be subject to overvotes and undervotes." And, it scared the hell out of him, frankly. And the guy said, well, it said on the piece of paper that this is, according to the Help America Vote Act, we must inform you of this. Well, he took this paper, he got it to me, we put it up on the blog, we looked at it, and we found out that this reference in the Help America Vote Act was about educating voters, if they vote on paper, that educating them about the dangers of overvoting, meaning marking more than one candidate for a race. It had nothing about undervoting, and as someone said to me, Help America Vote Act, HAVA, talks about educating voters, not intimidating them and scaring the hell out of them. And I was able to take that that notice and bring it up to the Secretary of State and have her take a look at it, and they said, yeah, this is out of line. What happened? The registrar changed that, got rid of that paper, went back to something that was, more reasonable. And the fact is, this particular registrar in Monterey County does not like paper ballots. He wants his electronic voting machines, and they're willing to scare anybody they can into not using paper. The only reason this changed, however, was because of a citizen who saw it, who spoke out, who made noise about it, and that is how this system changes. It doesn't change, and I know you and I have talked about this before. It's not going to change because the government changes it. It's not going to change because the media changes it. It's going to change when the citizens step up and take back their democracy.
Amen to that. Because we're going to have electorates, we're going to have votes. There's no sense voting if they're going to have one of those machines there, because you never know whether the machine is going to vote in favor of your candidate or the other candidate. We've heard stories about people would press for the Republican and the Democrat would come up, or they're going to vote for the Democrat, the Republican could come up, and what do you do? You're in there in the booth, and the machine will not carry out your directions.
Yeah, and you also can't get anyone to pay attention when you have this problem. I mean, we saw this happen in 2004. We saw this happen in 2006. People try to bring attention to the matter. And every time they say, oh, it's the voters' fault. They must have hit the screen in the wrong place.
Hold on, though. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and you have to understand that there are the people out there who really don't believe in elections. They're not interested in fair and open elections. They want the people simply to be there to pay the taxes and to go through the form of voting, but they're not to have any influence on the outcome. I mean, you see what happened in 2004, where they're in many parts of Ohio, in the area where they had a large black component who was probably going to vote Democratic, where there weren't any voting machines. So there'd be one voting machine, for thousands of people. People were standing in line for hours to get into the precincts. And I mean, everything was done to discourage the blacks from voting. And in that election, you have to understand, I'm coming from a perspective of somebody who's been a lifelong Republican. But I believe in fairness. And I think if you don't have a fair election, that how can you expect the people to support the government? And certainly there were so many inconsistencies and downright things that were done to take away the people's right to vote in 2004, and it's been getting worse and worse, isn't it, as time goes by?
Well, there's no question, because not only is the electoral system itself and the machinery of the elections getting worse, but what we're finding is more and more information about the overt acts that were committed on people, like you say, in Ohio, in Florida, and invariably it's minorities, I'm sorry to say, and it's Republicans who are bringing this rather systematic and complex scam to this country in order to shave votes. Now, we're seeing this in the current the U.S. attorney purge that folks have been on Capitol Hill testing about. At the heart of this entire purge business is this notion of voter fraud, Democratic voter fraud. Now, voter fraud is different from election fraud. Voter fraud, pretends that the voter themselves is doing something wrong. Either they're voting twice, or they're a non-citizen voting, or a dead people voting, and so forth. But what we have found is there is very little voter fraud in this country, as opposed to election fraud. And that's what we've been talking about up till now, the administration of the election, the type of machines that are used, and so forth. So there was a systematic effort from the Department of Justice to all across the United States to put forward this notion that there is this massive epidemic of Democratic voter fraud going on. And the Republicans, unfortunately, were willing to do anything to paint this picture and to put out propaganda to that end, and to bring and to use the Department of Justice to bring indictments and voter fraud cases that were time and again thrown out because there was no there. But they were doing it to affect elections. And then they were running out and saying, well, look, with all this Democratic voter fraud, we've got to impose these draconian photo ID rules at the polling place, which, as it turns out, 10 to 30 million Americans who are, minorities, urban poor, elderly, and so forth, don't have photo ID. They're not going to be able to vote. And again, we're playing with our democracy. We're trying to shave. And this was George Bush and the entire crew essentially politicizing the DOJ, turning it into a branch of the Republican Party to try and shave votes in close elections in swing states any way that they could, even if that meant keeping people, Americans, from being able to cast their vote. It's rather extraordinary, and we've got more and more evidence, including lists, caging lists, so-called, that were sent out by Karl Rove's own right-hand man back in 2004, that folks like myself and investigative journalist Greg Palast have been trying to get folks' attention about, where they were shaving people off the rolls who were, away in Iraq, and they couldn't respond to these certified letters they were sending them to determine if they had a real voter there or not. When they didn't send the letter back because they were overseas fighting in Iraq, then these guys tried to knock them off the voting rolls. Soldiers, troops, who are actually fighting in Iraq. So it's an extraordinary situation that we're dealing with, and that's what so much of the, if you've been keeping up, it's hard to keep up, I realize, but with the hearings that have been going on in the House and Senate Judiciary Committees on all of this, is exposing an extraordinary scam to keep Americans from casting their vote.
And, of course, then getting rid of some of the attorney generals who wouldn't go along with the scam. That was even more unconscionable. And, of course, many, many times you're violating the laws and doing this sort of thing, putting pressure on the federal attorney generals, not to do the right thing, but to do what was politically expedient.
Yep.
And that is, of course, what tyranny is made of. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Brad Friedman, and he's on the front lines of this, and you'll certainly want to get onto his email list and on a regular basis get the information he's putting out. Now, certainly, I know Greg Palast. We've had him on our programs a couple of times in the past, and he's really trying to get this information out, as I know you are. Well, are there any organizations out there that are trying to do what's right? Certainly both political organizations are trying to manipulate the system, and they're more interested in winning than doing what's right.
Well, yeah, and there are some very good groups out there who are working on this. Certainly my organization, VelvetRevolution.us, but I would also recommend VotersUnite.org. VoterAction.org. These are all groups who are fighting desperately to try to restore democracy to America. And at the same time, you have to be careful, because there are other groups out there who I normally would see as the good guys in most fights, like People for the American Way and Common Cause and so forth, but they are really leading us over a cliff. They're fighting for this election reform bill in the Congress, which is going to leave us as bad off as we are now. So please be very careful. Of course, I recommend people check out bradblog.com as well. We take your donations, because that's the only way that we can continue doing what we do here. Unfortunately, we have no corporate sponsors or anything else. It's done because this needs to be done, and we do rely on the citizens to help any way that they can. So all of these groups, Velvet Revolution, Voters Unite, Voter Action, Brad Blog, Greg Palast, certainly, we're trying like hell to get the information out there that the mainstream corporate media does not pick up on, does not report on. They're beginning to, that's the good news, by the way, Stan, is they're beginning to report so much of what folks like myself and Greg Palast have been reporting for some time, for many years, actually. And it's rather extraordinary that it takes this long for the information to come out. You know, we were talking about those caging lists that they were sending back in 2004. Now, this was Karl Rove's right-hand man. And they're sending these certified letters to these people, to thousands of voters down in Florida, Democratic voters, usually minority voters, you know, asking them to answer these certified letters, and when they don't, they're purging them from the roll. Now, we actually have the email from Tim Griffin. As I say, the right-hand man of Karl Rove, Tim Griffin, was later on installed as the U.S. Attorney.
Hold on right there.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Before we get back to this Brad story, I want to get Brad to get his website out and his email or whatever they can, and maybe help people get on your email list. But go ahead, let's get your website out again and help people get in touch with you, and perhaps help you if they're so motivated to do that.
I appreciate that. Yes, stop by bradblog.com. You can find my email address there, bradblog.com, or you can send an email to brad@bradblog.com. And for Dr. Stan listeners only, if you put in the subject line in big capital letters, "Put me on your list," I will add you to the email list that Stan is talking about. It's a media alert list that I send out the quick summaries each day of the most important items at bradblog.com. And we will alert you about that. And, of course, we appreciate your support any way you can. We take donations at bradblog.com, and we certainly rely on the help of the citizenry to keep on doing what we're doing here.
Well, if you're out there listening, I think you'd like to give us a call. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. 464-8295 across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Now, Brad was basically saying that in Florida, because they knew it was going to be a close election, they sent out certified letters to a lot of poor people in the poor districts. They sent certified letters to a lot of people who were off in the military fighting overseas. And they said, well, if you don't, of course, reply, we're going to take your name off the list. And so they basically dropped a lot of people from the voting list so that when they went to the polls, their name had been dropped. What was this story? How did they determine who they were going to target to try to get off the list so they couldn't vote?
Yeah, well, that's called vote caging, and it is strictly illegal to do that, to target minorities in minority areas to try to shave voters off the rolls. They were doing it in 2004, and, you know, we have those emails from Tim Griffin, Karl Rove's right-hand man. Actually, the subject line of the emails is caging list, and they attached all of these names and so forth that they had caged. It's a term from direct mailing, actually, where they, you know, separate mail into cages. In this case, they were separating minority voters into cages and then challenging to remove them from the voter rolls or challenging them on election day when they showed up. That's strictly illegal, and the Republican National Party was caught doing that back in the 80s in Louisiana, purging thousands of voters from the rolls using these caging lists. And in a lawsuit in 1986, in a consent decree that they agreed to, you know, they said that they would not do this ever again. But guess what? They were doing it ever again. They were continuing to do it through 2004. And when folks like Greg Palast and then myself reported on this, good luck getting anyone in the corporate media to pay attention. Now, mind you, when Palast reported this, he was working for the BBC. So you've actually got the BBC reporting on what's going on here in our elections in America, presidential elections, with evidence that the Republicans are doing something that is highly illegal and felonious, and the corporate American media doesn't think it's notable to pick up and report on. That's just an extraordinary situation to me. And even last week, or I think it was a week and a half ago, Monica Goodling testified before the U.S. House Judiciary Committee, and she worked at the DOJ, and she talked about this vote caging that was done by Tim Griffin, and not one congressperson on that panel really understood what vote caging was. They didn't follow it up. Linda Sanchez, actually, from out here in California, she asked about it. She said, well, what is vote caging? And Goodling didn't really give a substantive answer, and then they moved on. Well, I reported it, of course. Greg Palast did some exclusives for me at bradblog.com on all of this, because this was huge news. But again, it was not picked up by the media. I don't know what they're thinking. Finally, in the last couple of days now, we've seen some mainstream media reports that have said, hey, wait, what is this vote caging? And in fact, John Conyers, the head of the Judiciary Committee, said that he is going to be looking into this, that he's asked the BBC for the documents that they reported on in 2004, and he said that, quote, we are not done with Tim Griffin yet. So hopefully there'll be some more coming out on this in Congress and some more investigations, and hopefully some accountability here. Because, again, to me, this is the most reprehensible thing in the world, playing with our democracy while we're ostensibly sending out men and women around the world under the theory of spreading democracy. We are gaming it back here at home and, in fact, taking troops, U.S. troops who are out there doing that fight, making that fight around the world, and gaming their vote. And I can't think of anything more reprehensible than that.
Yeah, these people give dishonesty a bad name. Let's go to Mike, who's calling. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Brad Friedman, who is on the front lines of the battle to try to get honest elections. Ladies and gentlemen, we do not have honest elections in most places in America today where they have the electronic voting machines, and they know it. They just don't want you to know it. They want you to go to the polls and vote to the candidates, and then they'll rig the machines any way they want to. We've got to get back to paper ballots. We've got to get back to a paper trail. But maybe more than anything in America today, we need honest and moral people in positions of power. at every level of government. Well, leaving out Mike calling. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
A comment regarding the last presidential election. And I think that there's a good indication that not only was the election stolen, it was given away by the Democratic Party. There's a video, documentary video on the electronic voting machines. It's titled Stealing America Vote by Vote. And in that video, there's a segment on a senator from, a Democratic senator from Ohio named Bob Hagan. And he cast his vote on election night. And he saw the machine change his vote, and he went back and he corrected it. Of course, he was voting for Kerry, and he corrected and it changed his vote again to Bush. And so he called Democratic Election Headquarters. They told him to just be quiet and don't say anything.
And of course, we wonder why John Kerry, who had lots of money left over from his election, and didn't challenge what went on. I mean, it was a scam. John Kerry knew he was going to lose the election. He was this is my impression. It was all simply smoke and mirrors, rhetoric over reality, and the average American didn't understand. But it was a great show. John Kerry could have challenged the election in Ohio. He had the money to have gotten a recount of the entire vote. I mean, I don't know how many millions of dollars he had left over, and he just couldn't be bothered to do it.
Yeah, he had about $15 million left. And I won't go so far to say it was smoke and mirrors as far as the Democrats' complicitness in the in that election. I feel I have a responsibility to report what I can independently verify and what I can let you independently verify. What I'm finding in Ohio was what we usually find with Democrats. They're frightened. They're afraid to stand up for what's right, and they would rather, just go along to get along, and hey, we'll do it next time, and Kerry will have another shot in 08 or whatever it was. And I think they're afraid of being tarred, as you saw what happened. I mean, we had, near riots down there in Florida in 2000. You saw how Al Gore was tarred as a sore loser and so forth. And so I think that they're afraid to take that challenge. And like you say, I didn't see Stealing America Vote by Vote. I know there's a lot of other similar films out there that I have seen. Haven't seen that one. I think this idea of, shut up, don't make a big deal out of it. I know that there was fears in 04 or in 2006, again, that the Democrats thought, well, if we make too much noise about concerns about the voting machines, it will suppress the vote. People will think their vote doesn't count, and they won't come on out to vote. Now, I think that's somewhat a tortured logic, because the fact of the matter is, it's as if they want them to come out and vote, but the fact that their vote may not be counted properly, that's not a problem, or they don't want them to know that. It's very twisted. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but I don't see the overt, sort of theft of democracy, really, that I see coming from the other side, from the Republicans, who just seem willing to do anything and everything they can do to keep you from voting. And as we've saw back in 2004, virtually every single instance, like the one that Mike mentioned, the caller mentioned, of vote flipping on those touchscreen machines, always went where people were trying to vote for the Democrat and it flipped over to the Republican. I'm trying to think if there is any instances that I heard of it happening the other way. Why is that, you suppose?
Because I think the fix was in. There was the term the Republicans going to win again, and George Bush was going to so discredit the Republican Party and the Christian movement in America that no Christian would ever, and certainly no Republican, win for a good long time after the mess we're going to be in by 2008. Well, it's anything else you want to say?
It'll be skewed towards a Democratic candidate whenever it's predetermined that a Democratic candidate is to get in, and I believe that's what we're going to see in the next presidential election, because it's going to be for Hillary.
All right, well, we'll wait to see if you're right or not.
Now, that may happen, and if I where and when I find evidence of that happening, look, there's a we've got a lot of Democratic Secretary of State down in Georgia, Kathy Cox. She was the one who brought in those Diebold touchscreen machines with no paper trail at all. Democrat Linda Lamone up in Maryland, who brought in the touchscreen machines up there. So I'm not saying that I've always said it's not a matter of right and left. This is a matter of right and wrong. Unfortunately, we do see more Republican gaming, direct, overt gaming of the system than we do with the Democrats.
Yeah. Well, we talk about Bones candidate number one versus Bones candidate number two. Well, there's more Bones involved in this than most people realize. The Hines family fortune is Skull and Bones money. H.J. Hines himself, class of 32, Bonesman.
We got a small little group of people who are really running things on both sides. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Mike, before we let you go?
Yep. Okay, thanks, Dan.
Okay, well, let's go to Jack, who's calling us from Michigan, and our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Hey, Jack, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Thanks for taking the call. I heard a local state congressman describing a legislative proposal that he was co-sponsoring, and he said that, it has to go over to the Legislative Service Bureau. The Legislative Service Bureau is a sort of a clandestine agency of government. They're comprised of all BAR Esquire attorneys. All judges are Bar Esquire attorneys. They are also members of the Masons or other secret societies. I think we should really prohibit anyone with a title of nobility, whether it's Bar Esquire attorney or anything else, especially if they're secret society members, from holding public office.
Well, I think that right now we need to get good pair of elections. But thanks so much for your thoughts, Jack. And our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the major theme is, how are we going to get honest elections? And then once we have honest elections, maybe we can get honest people to be willing to run. But why put out all your time and your effort and break your heart, submitting yourself to all the pressure running for office when you know you're going to have electronic voting machines that can be scammed? And I think that's the major thrust of what you're trying to do, isn't it, Brad?
Well, yeah, and you say, well, how are we going to get fair elections? I'll just add that we have in this country a rich history of stolen elections and people gaming the democracy. And I suspect that there is no system that is secure. People, if there's a way to game an election, people will do so. There is just too many millions, billions, and trillions of dollars online when we have these elections. The fact that most Americans are under the impression that, hey, this is America, we would never do anything like that here, is really quite backwards if you look back at our history of elections in this country. So no matter what we do, and this includes even, paper ballots, hand-counted paper ballots, people are going to try to game the system. So what is the answer? The answer is people. The answer is transparency and the citizens paying attention to how the process works and keeping their eye on things every single step of the way. And that is the only thing that I have seen that has made a difference. And at bradblog.com, I follow action on this all over all 50 states and in counties up and down California and Florida and everywhere else. It is always the local folks, the people who have made the public records requests, who have contacted the media, who have contacted me at Bradblog and said, hey, this is what's going on and I've got the documents to prove it. Or take a look at this video and watch what's going on here in this tabulating room. It's the people keeping their eyes on the system. It's government by the people, for the people, of the people and for the people. Well, we better start acting like it and realize that we have to take ownership of our democracy, and that means more than sitting at home watching the debate on Fox News and watching the results roll in on election night. You've got to participate in this system. If you do nothing else, once a year, for crying out loud, you can show up, you can be a poll worker, and you can try to hold these people honest and accountable.
And believe me, there are people there who are working the polls who are not honest and accountable. We just need a majority who are. And this is the only way we're ever going to be able to regain control of our electoral process down the line. Theoretically, it would be nice to be able to limit the power of government so there wouldn't be so much of an incentive to want to spend to steal elections. I mean, why would anybody, you know, need $100 million or $200 or $250 million to run for the presidency? Well, of course you do that because there's a lot of money to be made if you're the president. That's what it's all about. If we were, as it was at one time in America, where the power of the government was limited by the change of the Constitution, they abided by the 10th Amendment and limited the power of the central authority, then of course there would be no tremendous financial advantage to being the president of the United States. You'd serve there because you wanted to serve the people, not because you wanted to make a payback all the people who'd donated to your campaigns. Well, Brad, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program.
Well, I think we covered a lot of ground here,
and I'm hoping that
the bottom line here is that people will realize they need to get involved, and I want to encourage people to wake up tomorrow and call their Congress members, call their senators, and demand a paper ballot that is actually counted for every vote cast. It's a very simple idea, but it's something that is apparently going over the heads of both the folks in the House and the Senate. They're missing it completely. They're about to pass legislation that's going to codify these electronic voting machines for years to come. The only thing that's going to stop them is the people speaking out on this. Stop by bradblog.com for much more information every single day on all of this, and take what you learn there, and hit that button that says email it to someone. Send it out there. Make noise, because you are the instrument of our democracy, no one else.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Brad. Our guest has been Brad Friedman, and he works almost full-time on this issue and certainly working with other people across America. And this is not a right-left issue. This is an issue about freedom versus feudalism, freedom versus fascism, freedom versus, of course, the imposition of a tyranny on this country, which will make freedom simply a remembrance of things past. What we have to do, if we expect by any peaceful means to maintain our freedom, and if it ever goes past peaceful means, why, of course, you never know what's going to happen, and you end up with chaos and terrible bloodshed and suffering. If we want to do that peacefully, take back our country, we've got to have honest elections. And you're not going to get them because the people who are in positions of power have no advantage in having honest elections. They've got the power, and the last thing they want to do is be voted out of office. You're going to have to be involved. You're going to have to follow Brad's leadership. His information is valid. Start writing and emailing, I shouldn't say write, but email, call, and fax your elected representatives. Is that legislation actually in the hopper in the Senate, in the House today?
You bet. It's the version, the bill in the House is headed to the House floor for a full House vote, perhaps as early as this week. And the Senate bill has recently been introduced, and it is not far behind. So
no, it's right. Well, then get involved.
Now's the time.
Get the information from Brad. Thanks very much for being with us. I appreciate it, and I always look forward to our time together.
Always appreciate it, Stan. Thanks so much.
Good night. Okay, fine. That was Brad Friedman. I hope you enjoyed our program. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Understand that what we're talking about is very, very real. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And of course, we do have DVDs on this subject. They have to call me personally. We'll have to track them down. But we really, if you look at some of these DVDs, you realize the enormity of the problem, and you actually see this senator from talking about how when he pressed on the voting machine, why they kept changing the vote from Republican from Democrat to Republican, and when he went to Democratic headquarters, and he was a Democrat, he was told just to be quiet. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, that there are powerful spiritual forces working behind the scenes, intent upon destroying our country. If you've not yet seen my talk on Brotherhood of Darkness, it's available in book form, in DVD or in VHS. And then my next talk on Forbidden Secret, our four tape sets on the secret, behind the secret. You need, of course, to get our DVD on the emergence, Constant Cumbie's material. You need to get our DVDs on the secret mystery of America's beginnings and Riddles in Stone and Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2. There's so much information that's there that will help you to understand the spiritual component behind the political and ideological and cultural component that most people see. Certainly the DVDs, the 3-hour, 4-hour, 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll is so vitally important if you'd like to know more about them. Our website is radioliberty.com, but you need to understand that material is available. You just need to obtain it. You need, of course, to begin to circulate it. It's your job to become educated and educate others. Now, lots of times I will have people call and say, well, I'm trying to tell others they don't want to hear. And a lot of them don't. But some of them do. But it's not your job to make people believe. It's your job to tell them, because things are going to get much worse and much sooner than most people think. And you really have to understand that we're on the verge of a dramatic change in America. We're on the verge of the destruction of the currency of this country, which is going to end up impoverishing most of our people. And if you've not yet seen my talk on the financial tsunami or read the syllabus that goes along with that, you need to get it. You need to understand what's happening financially in our society. You need to understand what's happening spiritually in our society. And, of course, you need to understand the history of the wars of the last century. We've got a great talk. It's called Iraq, the Untold Story, but it's really the story of all of the wars of the last century. Iraq, the Untold Story, comes with a great syllabus that has a lot of the documents you will not see elsewhere. And, of course, you'll certainly want to get that talk on the Forbidden Secret, because that comes with an excellent syllabus, too. So many of our talks come with a syllabus. You can always ask about it. Certainly our talk on the Hidden Agenda goes into water fluoridation. And the syllabus that goes with that, there is a plan for mass genocide. It's being carried out on you and your children today. And, of course, certainly you want to get in the background of how they're poisoning our children with mercury. You need to get the DVD. And when you do it, actually DVD or VHS, comes with a CD-ROM with thousands of pages of documentation. It's called Mercury, Autism, and the Global Population Agenda. Mercury, Autism, and the Global Population Agenda. Dr. David Ayoub did a wonderful job. You can actually see a lot of our videos up on our website at radioliberty.com. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like more information. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.